Welcome back to another episode of Canadian Government Executive Radio. I'm pleased to be with you, and I'm your host, J. Richard Jones. Today's episode is focused on health, and we're quite pleased to welcome back Sean Nisbet, registered holistic nutritionist, yoga teacher, and master Nordic pole walking instructor. Today we want to talk a little bit about sleep, the benefits of sleep, and the value and the role that it plays in good health. Many people suffer from challenges with getting a good, consistent sleep, and many do not know how much sleep actually can affect your overall health and your day-to-day routines. Sean, welcome back to the show, and we're really excited to hear about how we can benefit from good sleep and your ideas around how we can improve our sleep.
Thank you, John. This is such an important topic for everyone of every age.
So to begin with, I guess, you know, normally most people, they go to bed and they're expected to get 5 to 8 hours of sleep, but many times it's not consistent. What do you feel the problem is? What's missing in today? Is it stress? Is it just lifestyle? What should we be doing to ensure we get a good sleep? And how does it impact our health and our lives?
Well, it impacts them more than we think. I think sleep is very misunderstood. When we think of sleep, some people think it's kind of like a waste of their time or something we do after all the important tasks of the day have been completed. But sleep is where we rejuvenate. Sleep is where our immune system builds up. Sleep is where all the repairing has to happen after the damage of the day. There's a saying out there that wakefulness is low-level brain damage. So as soon as we wake up, I always say, like in Demolition Derby, our body's being broken down. And it's only during our sleep that we find time to repair. When you said 5 to X amount of hours, we really need 7 to 8 hours. There's studies all over the place. 7 to 8 hours for an adult. For a child, it actually, the studies have gone to 9.25 hours. And some people, of course, can get away with less. Some people can get away with a little bit more. But I always say to a person, you know, how do you know if you're getting a good night's sleep? Well, simply put, you will wake up on time before your alarm. You'll wake up feeling great, not needing that coffee. You will go through your day with boundless energy. And when it's time to sleep, you'll go to bed and fall into a deep sleep within the first 5 or 10 minutes maximum. Then you know you're getting enough sleep. If your energy fails during the day, if you need to hit the snooze button more times than necessary, if you wake up in the middle of the night, those are all signs that your sleep is not enough.
You know, that sounds so simple, but I, just speaking for myself, I know that that is not the experience I have with sleep, that's for sure. I'd be curious to ask you, Sean, when you said, you know, up to 9 hours of sleep, what for an adult is that? Does that still apply? I that sounds like a long time to me.
9.25 is what they did with children, saying that children needed that. For us, we can get the 7 to 8 hours. But there are studies out there that say those who sleep less than 5 to 6 hours a night and those who sleep older, more than 9 or 10 hours a night, will both die early.
Really?
And the reason is because, first of all, if you're not sleeping enough and not just being in bed, this means in a deep sleep. Sometimes people will go to bed and hop in their bed at a certain hour and get out of their bed at a certain hour and calling that sleep, but it's restless. They're waking up. They have restless leg. They're in pain. They're getting up to go to the bathroom a number of times. So that would not be considered restorative sleep. And then for those who, when their alarm goes off and they have to hit the snooze or on weekends, they're finding that they're sleeping 10, 11, 12 hours. I'm not talking children. I'm talking adults here. So my question would be, well, why? Because your body truly would love to wake up after about 7 or 8 hours of deep sleep. And if your body says to you, get back to sleep, hit that snooze button, you have to ask why. Is it because, number one, the person that you're sleeping with is snoring and disrupting your sleep and you're not aware of it or aware of it? Is it because you may have restless leg syndrome and it is causing you to have a disrupted sleep? Is it because you may snore, but we normally can't hear ourselves snore, but you could have something called sleep apnea, which is more prevalent now than I've ever seen. So that sleep apnea causes you to stop breathing during the night, which now your brain and your body need that. And then you will snore because your body will actually be gasping for air. So the sleep apnea is something that you may not know you have. Your partner might say it might be snoring. And that's why for me in my office, I'm always recommending that my clients who snore go for a sleep apnea test.
Interesting. I'd like to tackle first the restless leg syndrome. I mean, you've mentioned a number of factors here, your other partner snoring and some of those things. But what is restless leg syndrome?
It basically is cramping. Sometimes it can be a full-out cramp, which, you know, if you've ever had one of those, you just sit there still because you can't even move. Restless leg is meaning cramping. Just your legs feel restless and they're hurting and you're moving them thinking that motion might stop the pain. There could be many, many reasons for that. I won't diagnose here. But one of the things that we look closely at is magnesium level in the body. Magnesium is one of those many minerals, but it's one that a lot of people are low in because they are found in nuts and seeds and whole grains and fruits and vegetables. But when it comes to absorbing minerals into the body, it can be enhanced or impaired by your digestion and your age. So two people may be eating the same diet, and one person could have good magnesium status. The other person could have a low magnesium status. So for those clients of mine, I may look into improving their diet. I might look into a magnesium supplement. I may ask them to maybe try to have a bath at night with Epsom salt, which would be 2 cups in a bath, or ask them to put their feet in a foot bath both times for about 20 minutes, making sure you rinse afterwards, because Epsom salt is magnesium. And when you put your body in the water with magnesium, your body will absorb what it needs. And magnesium is the mineral that allows your muscles to relax. Calcium allows them to contract. Magnesium allows them to relax. So if you're low in magnesium, those muscles are not relaxing, and that can cause pain, discomfort, contractions.
Huh, that is really interesting. I certainly wouldn't have known that. Sleep apnea, I've heard a lot about it, but I'm going to imagine that's something that has to be properly tested first. And then I'm not really sure on what the remedies are, but perhaps you could give us a quick outline on your thoughts.
Yep. So it's really good to go have a sleep test. What it is you would go to a sleep clinic. You would arrive very late, like at 9 o'clock or so, and they would hook you up to a bunch of electrodes, and then you would go to sleep. Of course, if you have to wake up in the night, you ring the bell and they help you go to the bathroom with all of these electrodes on you. You're basically there from the time you fall asleep when you wake up, which they wake you up quite early. They take off all the electrodes and off you go on your day. And then you're called back in to see if, in fact, you have sleep apnea. They will be able to see if you've had moments of no breath. If you have sleep apnea and you don't take care of it, it can take 10 years off of your life. What you are requested to do is go on a CPAP machine. And there's many kinds. And my children, when they saw their father go on one, they joked with him saying he looked like Darth Vader. But first night that you put one of these on and you get your sleep, you will be astounded to how good you feel in the morning, because you've gotten a deep sleep and your body has stayed oxygenated through the evening.
You know, I could imagine that a solid sleep, like you had mentioned earlier, would be just excellent. I don't think I've experienced in many years my body waking up on its own and feeling refreshed. So I'm going to imagine the type of treatments for sleep apnea will ensure that the body gets that full recharge cycle. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Because if you think when you have sleep apnea, you can go without breath for 20, 30, 40 seconds. Our body works on oxygen, so you're really depriving your body and your brain of that. You know, we are restoring our body, our hormones, our immune system when we sleep, making hormones when we sleep. I think people think when you go to sleep, the body sort of turns off. Well, it doesn't. It's during the sleep that your body repairs. It's every damage that it had that day. Think of our athletes without exercise. How would they repair all the damage of that day? Let alone if you have a disease or if you're aging. It also allows you to make growth hormones, which are extremely important. It also allows you to make all of your hormones in the body. You actually, well, when they say proper sleep time, it is really best in a perfect world to start slowing down your evening around the 8 o'clock mark, to take your body into bed at 10, to fall asleep at 11, and then to wake up 7 or 8 hours later. But we don't do that. And what happens during the sleep, and studies are very different, but between that 11 and 2 time, we make a lot of our hormones for the next day. And those hormones could be insulin for blood sugar. They could also be the hormones that you need for sleep. There's two hormones that run in your body. There's the cortisol and tryptophan are two of the many. And cortisol is the hormone that you need to be up in the morning to wake you up and make you feel great. Your tryptophan should be low. During the day, your cortisol should slowly go down. And at nighttime, when you go to sleep, your cortisol should be very low and your tryptophan should be high. And the regulators of our hormones are the light in our eyes.
That's really interesting. Now, I heard you say you should be in bed by 10 and asleep by 11 p.m. So is it on the norm? Does it take a person 1 hour to fully get into a deep sleep?
No, you should be able to do that within 5 or 10 minutes. That's a great question. What I'm saying there is, so we alluded to the fact that our body is actually on a cycle. Our body, we think we can take it off that cycle. No, it's an ingrained circadian rhythm, and our rhythm goes with the rhythm of the earth. So our sleep goes with the rhythm of the sun rising and setting. So this I always found quite fascinating. When you first wake up in the morning, you should have your blinds open and you should be waking up to light. Now to talk about those people who wake up before it's light. But really, to set your circadian rhythm for the day, you should wake up in a light room, meaning from the sunlight, which is far more intense than any light bulb. You should try to go to an east window where the sun is rising, look towards it or get outside. When you bring that real sunlight into your eyes, it's actually the pupil, which is a hole, that black part that goes, the light goes in through those holes to your pineal gland. And that's what sets your body to know, well, now in X amount of hours, we're going to go to sleep. So when people wake up before the sun rises and they're waking up in a dark room or they've kept their blinds closed, they will have more difficulty falling asleep at night. So our body wakes up and sets its hormones for the day from light, sunlight. Now at nighttime, the body sets the hormones for sleep from less light getting in your eyes, hence the sun sets. But sadly, in our culture now, we have a thing called electricity. And what that has done is brought false or fake light into our lives. So in our homes, we'll have our lights on. Kitchens are very bright now. Our TVs, our computers, our phones. They really disrupt. So when I'm saying get into bed an hour before, that's not to watch TV or look at your phone or your computer. That would be to calm your body down and read the way we used to when we were younger. The computers and the phones, let alone the televisions, but they're even worse for our eyes. They bring in a blue light, and that blue light is signaling our brain to say it's still daytime. So your hormones are not flipping. Your cortisol, which is keeping you awake, stays high. Your tryptophan is unable to be produced to get you to sleep. So I tell a lot of people, there's a few things. I would love people off of their computers within 2 hours of sleep. I would love people to be dimming the lights in their houses before they sleep. There is something that I have on my phone, on my computers, on my children's, and it's called Flux. It's actually spelled F.Lux, L-U-X, or Flux. And you just Google that app and you download it onto your phone. You download it onto your computers, and wherever you are in the world, it can sense where you are. And when your sun is setting, then it actually changes the color on your computer and takes the blue light off. So just in case you have to be on your computer at night, it won't have as much effect on hormones for you to fall asleep.
What a great idea. I've never heard of that before. Now, Sean, I want to throw you a bit of a curveball. So those are the cycles for sleep. What are the effects of people who are working the night shift? What does that do?
They are one of my hardest clients to work with. With them, we have to work very hard in knowing when they're going into work. And really, when they're going into work is their morning. When they're coming home, that is their evening. So, and us also, for them to go to sleep, because they're now having to go to sleep when the sun is up. So those hormones are not being made. So what I'm about to say is also good for all of us. It's sort of called sleep hygiene. What should our room be like for us to get optimum sleep? Number one, the room has to be dark. So some people will put a blackout blinds on their windows. They might wear them as a mask. That room, to know if your room is dark enough to get optimum sleep, meaning you can put your hand in front of your face and you cannot see your hand, then you know that your room is dark enough. So it has to be dark. There are some people that can be affected by, there could be maybe a stereo across the room with a little red light. That little red light could be enough to disrupt their sleep. Also, if you have your phone, well, you should not have your phone in your room. It should always be, you know, downstairs in another room. Never bring your phone into your room. So your alarm clock, there might be the time on it. You want to turn it around so you cannot see the light. And your room should be cold. Not cold, it should be cool. The body sleeps best in a cooler room. 65 degrees Fahrenheit is, some say that is optimum. Some people go up to 70, but actually will feel sleepier when we're in a cold room. Sometimes noise, sometimes people like to have a fan on, not directed towards them, or they might use a white noise machine. So the room should be dark, it should be cool, it should be quiet, it should be free of electronics. And then in the morning, to be woken up, it is best not to be jolted, because then your cortisol goes up too high. You would love an alarm clock that was might be a little bit quieter. And of course, people, I've got people who will set 3-4 alarms in their room. It'll be, they'll bring their computer in, they'll have their phone, they'll have their alarm clock, they'll have another alarm clock across the room. That means something is definitely wrong with their lifestyle and sleep cycle. So there is a lot that we can do just in our rooms. What I love to tell some people to do, because they have to wake up in a dark room, even if they put their lights on, it's not light enough to flip those hormones, is there are sleep lights. And I bought them for all my children at one time. And you can get them many places, even Costco. It's a light. Sits beside you, many different shapes. And if you set your alarm to wake up at 6, then at 5:30, it would begin lighting up. It actually will light up very bright, similar as it can be to sunlight. You can have birds chirping. You can put a soft alarm on there or music, whatever you want. And that will slowly wake up your body. But the light is going into your eyes for 30 minutes before you have to wake.
What a great idea. I think I might even try that myself. These are all great tips, Sean. I really appreciate you coming on the show today. Is there an article that you're going to send to accompany this talk, or can our listeners and readership view something on your website to get more information?
Yes, actually, on my website, if you go under articles, I wrote an article a number of years ago And I think I put the basic things in there and then these hints of how to get a good night's sleep, right to, you know, what coffee can do, what alcohol can do, what different foods can do, how sugar affects. If you want to have a snack, what would be the best snack? I'll throw it out there, pumpkin seeds. Why we don't want to eat too close to sleep time. So you can see this is such a huge topic with a lot of hints, and that article might answer some questions.
And what's your website handle again, Sean?
So it's just my name. It's just my name, SeanNisbett.com. It's SeanNisbett.
Now, Sean, I know today we've covered a lot of the basics for sleep and sleep hygiene, but there's quite a bit more information. And as a result, I'd like to invite you to come back for part two. And as a bit of a teaser for our listenership and readership, can you tell us some of the areas that you're going to cover off?
Oh, I'd love to, John. So we can talk about in episode two, foods that can have a positive or a negative effect on sleep, how caffeine can affect sleep, how alcohol and napping can affect sleep, and how our sleep has a huge benefit to our reproductive system, our immune system, our memory, and our ability to detox.
Wow, that's incredible. I've heard a little bit about brain drain and that there may be a connection to Alzheimer's and some of the other things. We can look forward to hear that from you in episode two, yes?
Absolutely.
So for our listeners and readership, please be sure to tune in to the next episode on sleep with Sean Nisbett. I'm sure you won't want to miss this one. We have had the pleasure of speaking with Sean Nisbett, registered holistic nutritionist, yoga teacher, and master Nordic pole walking instructor. Sean, thank you for coming on the show today.
You're so welcome, John.